So,
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's kind of worth it, but
Yeah.
sometimes I'm like, I don't give a fuck. Please don't talk to me about fairies.
Welcome to another episode of Jabber and the Drone, the movie review podcast that politely disagrees to agree. I am Cassidy Robinson, and you are...
Richard Wally.
And that is the opposite of what we usually do every week.
Yeah, but that's okay.
Change it up.
Yeah, I gotta switch it up. Introduce ourselves.
Hold on, I have a bunch of garbage underneath my computer that I know is gonna make noise. There we go.
Well, that was a bad life decision. Mm-hmm.
I had to clean my room last week.
Oh, that's sad.
I was hosting guests here in Orange County. Keith and Ashley, friends from Idaho, came and stayed with me for a couple days, and they were sleeping on my floor, so I had to have a floor for them to sleep on that was covered in school books and clothes and whatever else.
Yeah, guests can make you do things like clean and
mm-hmm.
other stuff.
I dusted, so. Richard.
That's crazy.
I dusted.
Do you believe in that even?
Barely. I mean, cleaning's a weird thing for me. I binge clean.
Okay.
I'll forgo cleaning for a long, long time and just kind of let it get unmanageable. Which, right. I'm not that messy of a person, generally. I kind of throw away stuff after I eat and whatever. So it takes a while to get really bad.
Never gets disgusting.
Yeah. Okay. I don't become a hoarder at any point. Unless it goes unchecked for years.
Except for movies, let's be honest, and music a little bit.
Yeah, but I keep those organized. I don't just pile them on my bed underneath a dead cat.
It's getting close. It's getting close. This is the intervention episode.
The one person intervention. Do you have a bunch of people there on your side?
I do, actually.
They all have things they want to say to me.
Cassidy, your movie collection has got out of control.
We
want to let you know that we're here for you.
But what ends up happening is it gets really bad, and then I'll be like, oh, fine, I'll clean. And then it starts with me just kind of throwing away a couple things and straightening up, and then I could be fine. And then I'm like, well, I'm already up, dressed, sweaty. I might as well just go for it. And then I just start, like, I'll get down to the point where I'm like, have a Q-tip at, you know, the corners of my room or something.
Q-tips. Now that's another subject. We don't need to go down that rabbit hole.
That's another intervention for another day.
Yeah, that's another intervention for another day.
But yeah, we did Disneyland, and that was $100.
That does it costs money to go to the magical place on Earth. Mm,
that's not even counting the new California Adventure Park, which I've never seen. Yeah. That was like an extra $50. So this is just Disneyland proper. And, you know, going on 3.5 hours of sleep, walking in, I think I did pretty well.
How was Star Wars?
Oh, how long is it? You've been there kind of recently.
Yeah, I didn't get it. We did it right before they did the revamp, though, on Star Tours.
Oh, they've totally prequeled it out now. Yeah, like you, you remember Star Tours maybe when you were a kid. I don't know if you went to Disneyland when you were younger. Did you?
Oh, you're asking? No. The first time I went, I was I believe a 24 or 25-year-old man on my honeymoon.
Okay. So if I'm remembering correctly, the old Star Tours was, when I went as a kid, it was basically just the main mission from the first movie where you blow up the Death Star, right? Like, you do some other stuff, but then at the end you blow up the Death Star, right?
I think, I don't remember.
I'm pretty sure that's what it was. You fly up into space, you have C-3PO, he's kind of guiding the tour, and it's like this movie screen, and your seat kind of moves around like you're actually flying.
Yeah.
Well, that's all the same, except for now you wear 3D glasses, and instead of going up and blowing up the Death Star, you come back down to Gungan territory, that planet, whatever it was. Oh. And then you, like, go into the water, you get attacked by a sea creature.
Did you only do it once, though?
Oh, yeah, you can only... There was only one ride we did more than once, and I think it was Indiana Jones.
Oh.
I think.
Because there's, like, I guess there's, like, 70 outcomes for that ride now, Star Tours.
That's what it looked like, because there was all these posters everywhere, and it's like, each tour could be a different thing.
Yeah.
And I was wondering that, because me and Keith, when we walked out, we'd both seen the old one before, and we're like, kind of wanted to blow up the Death Star. That's sort of what I came for, not this Gungan bullshit. even though I still had fun, because, like, I don't need to worry about a narrative when it's just... Woo! Flying!
Yeah, right.
but then I saw all the posters, and it's like, I wonder if you can do more than one mission now. And that's what it seemed like.
I think so. I think it's different. It's different in various ways. And I think they still have, like, you can kind of do the old one. You just didn't get a blow up. You're not cool enough to blow up the Death Star. You had to go fight in Gungan. How does that make you feel?
Well, I don't know. okay, well then let's just go ahead and get into our movie news, because we have a lot of it. And let's start with this one here. The Joaquin Phoenix may or may not end up playing Doctor Strange in a Doctor Strange movie. This is a big Comic-Con reveal.
It was somewhat. They were talking about it, but they didn't actually do it because it didn't get finalized, apparently, so he's still just in talks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure we'll get more, but yeah, he would be a fun Doctor Strange.
Apparently he was spotted somewhere buying Doctor Strange comics incognito. Like, in my head I see it like he's like in sunglasses and a hoodie, and he's like in a back alley, and someone hands him Doctor Strange comics in a paper bag.
Yeah, that's how I see it. That's actually exactly how I saw it, I'm not gonna lie. I was actually going to make that joke, so I'm glad that one of us did.
Mm.
He would be a cool one. He definitely, it would be, I would like to see this, the kind of crazy version of him.
Yeah.
And I think this is kind of a very cinematic character that could maybe work, almost work better in film than it does on comics.
Mm-hmm. And it's a character that I think, it's an IP that has a brand, but it's not... one that people are... It's not like Spider-Man, where if you fuck up something really minor like web shooters, people are going to flip shit.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with people flipping shit about that.
But you know what I mean. Like, there's a few things about Doctor Strange you have to get right. He's a necromancer. He does magic. That's about it. After that, I think people are going to be more or less willing to let you play with the character. So they could really change the tone, change the setting. They could change just about everything, and people would be more or less okay with it, as long as you get the basics right.
Well, there's tons of directions you can take it to.
Yeah. So. And the fact that they're talking to Joaquin Phoenix means that they're, you know, they want to make take this a little seriously.
Well, I think Marvel is smart in trying to take all of their properties seriously instead of...
Or take them in the direction that they need to be.
The best direction.
Yeah, and of course this still could be Scott Derrickson at the helm. So the two working together, I mean, I think it could be pretty cool.
Yeah, I agreed.
Okay.
The next one, another Comic-Con kind of thing, is Walking Dead creator. He just started this new comic called Outcast, and Cinemax has already ordered the pilot for it. Now, Outcast as a comic, it's basically like the ongoing series if Exorcist was an ongoing comic series.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of ways. I have read the first issue. It was pretty good, too. I think that Robert Kirkman, as he's gone on and as he's experienced, I think he's gotten better as a writer, and I think that this is... His characters don't tend to be too over-sherry and too cognizant of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I think with his zombies, he wanted it to be more of a drama. I think he's going full-out horror on the Outcast series, and he's not, like, cutting corners and stuff with it. He's really just like, okay, this is going to be fucked up at times.
Yeah.
And so I'm actually fairly into this.
Okay. And this is being picked up by, possibly being picked up by Cinemax.
Yeah, Cinemax is...
And how many issues of this comic is out there?
Not very many, because only the first issue came out, I believe, last month. I think they're on a series... I think it's on either two or three.
So, the, I mean, kind of like Walking Dead, they could have two separate universes kind of going at the same time.
Yeah, right. Well, and Cinemax, as they've seen all of their rivals and sister channels and everything kind of doing their own proper channeling, I think they're starting to try to get in the business too, because they have the, whatever that, I forgot what that Amish, Banshee is the, I believe the show, and it's a an Alan Ball thing.
No idea. Never heard of it, but it sounds crazy.
yeah, it's Alan Ball and Amish people. Yeah. So it's a crime thing. I think that's what I got. Maybe I made up the whole Amish thing. Maybe. I know Alan Ball's doing it though, so that's not disputed.
That part is true. Okay, well, yeah, you seem to know more about this than I do. The fact that they're going to Cinemax means they could definitely, the horror can get a lot more horrific.
And they can get all porny if they want.
And I'm sure they will.
There we go.
All right. King Kong. Legendary Pictures announces a Skull Island movie, somewhat of an origin film for King Kong. Now, I'm guessing this is going to have no connection, really, to the Peter Jackson reboot that came out a few years ago.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. Because, because it's different companies, and he's doing that whole Hobbit, so many frames a second. I think this is a whole new thing. Legendary, since they've come on to, they're kind of trying to go at a new angle since they're with a new company in Universal. And what's interesting about this new direction, though, I asked you this and you got mad at me earlier before the podcast, but I was wondering, with doing this origin movie for King Kong, if they're not leading up to a Godzilla versus kind of King Kong kind of territory, because they do have all these kaiju properties at the moment.
Yeah, I mean. Yeah, they have the opportunity that if they wanted to, and you know how the Marvel model is kind of spreading now. Everyone wants to do these amoeba verses.
Well, people are definitely trying, and I think some people are doing it kind of in
haphazardly,
in bad taste. Yeah.
Yeah.
But this is one that I'm actually more like, no, this one makes sense.
Do I want to see one, a modern, large-scale Godzilla versus King Kong?
Yeah, heck, don't yeah. You? Fuck yeah. Even completely. This is where I want to see things, and I mean,
throw in some Jaegers. Let's just do it.
Well, they're already making, yeah, that's another thing, Pacific Rim 2 is coming.
Yeah,
that's also on the agenda, so I guess that's sort of news as well that we haven't talked about. So that's another thing. We know Pacific Rim 2 is coming out through Legendary, and now that they're attached to Universal, that also means... And so all of this stuff could collide.
Well, maybe maybe this is just their identity. Legendaries is doing these kind of giant monster movies.
Well, they're also getting... I know they're trying to help Universal jumpstart their...
Restart the Universal classic monsters again.
Yeah, and we'll get into that a little later, too.
All right. Quentin Tarantino did an interview a little while ago, and somebody asked him about the Kill Bill, The Whole Bloody Affair, which is like the 4.5 hour, no, it's more than that. It has to be close to 6 hour cut of Kill Bill 1 and 2 with the footage that was cut out after they were split into two different movies. It has been shown once before at the New Beverly, which is the rep house he owns here in L.A., he did a screening of The Whole Bloody Affair, back in 2012, I think. But now he says that now that things are kind of getting untied over at the Weinstein Company, that they want to release The Whole Bloody Affair limited release in 2015. So if you live in a bigger city, you might be able to see it.
That's okay. I guess. I don't know. To me, the Kill Bills are fun, but they're some of his lesser works. I don't need more Kill Bill.
I'd be interested in seeing the cut. I'd be interested to see how it works together. Because it was technically... I think the movie really works well as two separate things, because they are pretty different, both sides. I would be interested to see how they maybe flow together in one specific sitting. I enjoy the movies.
I prefer to just be released in
a Blu-ray.
in Blu-ray, just do it that way, and people can see it in the convenience of their homes. I don't know if it really needs a limited release. I do believe in the theater experience, mm-hmm. but I don't know.
Well, I don't... Yeah, I think, obviously, it's a fan deal. I don't think their plans with this is to really compete with the market. I think this is just like, you know, we're going to throw it out there.
Well, maybe I feel weird because I usually am a fan. Mm-hmm. And so for me not to be a fan and as big a fan, really, mm-hmm. so they're okay. Maybe that's where my drawback is that I'm like, oh, I'm not participating.
I don't really take those films seriously by any means, but I think they're fun. And I think as far as like Quentin Tarantino, rowdy, sixth grader, candy high goes.
Exploitation.
Yeah, I think it's some of his better stuff as far as that goes. I'd much rather watch Kill Bill than Django.
I agree with that. I had to think about it, but yeah.
And I actually specifically didn't buy the Blu-rays for the Kill Bills because I knew that this was still being talked about.
That was still in, yeah.
Yeah, so hopefully they'll have a set that where you can watch it as the whole bloody affair or watch each separate movie.
Well, recently I watched it with Jackie, my wife, because she hadn't seen them. Mm-hmm. And I realized that I'm much more into the second film than I am the first.
I am too, actually.
I much prefer the samurai movie shot like a Western than the Western shot like a samurai movie. So
yeah. okay.
So moving on, Alex Kurtzman is going to be directing The Mummy reboot from Universal, which we kind of touched on that the Universal, they're trying to get their not-so-giant, their regular-sized monsters kind of rebooted as well. You know, it's Alex Kurtzman. You got to take his kind of stuff with a grain of salt. I don't know. Mm. I don't know what he looks like as a director. Either this is going to be
this would be his first movie. Yeah, Robert Orci is doing the next Star Trek, isn't he? I think that's what we said.
Yes, a few weeks ago. He is.
So now you know these two have been writing partners for a long time. They've been writing a lot of stuff in Hollywood. The Star Trek movies, the Transformer movies, a few other superhero properties. I think Spider-Man, the new Amazing Spider-Man movies. Yeah. And they get a lot of criticism for kind of being hacky, and I kind of tend to agree they're not the best writers. Although I have heard that Kurtzman is the more narratively focused one of the two.
Okay.
So
well, we don't know. I don't know what we're seeing because they've been paired for so long. I mean, it's kind of like this is really kind of like hazardous ground. And I'm a huge fan of the original Universal mm-hmm. monsters. And so this is kind of for me. I'm like, you better do a good job, Mr. Kurtzman.
However,
find you in a back alley.
The you know the last franchise that they have to live up to, the what's his name, Summers.
Steven Summers
series with like by the end we're getting into Yetis and giant armies of Japanese skeletons and
which is true. I think I want to say they're trying to go more horror like original monsters, but I'm not sure because I do know that they want to build the monster universe. This one I'm not as excited about as
The Dracula or...
I'm not as excited about having to put Dracula with and meld them with the Wolfman and the Creature from the Black Moon. That universe doesn't need to happen to me because the solo films of the original are much better than when it's like Abbott and Costello and the Wolfman and Frankenstein and all that kind of crap.
Yeah.
Which it usually... So, I don't know. Maybe they have... I mean, I'm not really a never say never with this kind of stuff. Maybe it could work,
mm-hmm.
but I tend to be kind of leaning towards, I'm not sure about this.
So. Agreed. Okay. We really got to speed through these next few ones.
Okay.
Bill Murray might voice Baloo the bear in Jon Favreau's, Jungle Book adaptation. Yay or nay?
Yeah. Yay. Why not?
Yeah.
Bill Murray.
Personally, I want to see John Goodman do it, but whatever.
John Goodman, that's a good one.
Yeah.
There's a lot of other names attached to that movie. It's good stuff.
Yeah. There's that Kevin Feige one about how he doesn't have time to do a female superhero movie. I think it's a little too loaded So we'll just let our readers find that and talk about that for themselves.
Okay.
Paul Feig, director of Bridesmaids, may do an all-female Ghostbusters. Yay or nay?
I'm going to say I more go for nay. I'm not a big Paul Feig fan. I didn't really. I mean, maybe it's because I don't have the right parts down there. But I don't think he's really as great as everybody says. I don't mind the female cast idea though. So I'm yay on female cast.
Mm-hmm.
Not as excited about Paul Feig. There we go.
Fair enough. What do I think about this? It's I just don't want to see it leave Harold Ramis's. Or not Harold Ramis, he's the one who died.
Yeah, I was like, where is he going with this?
who directed the other ones?
Ivan Reitman.
Ivan Reitman, yeah. I always get those two mixed up. I just don't want to see it leave his hands, personally. I'm less worried about the Paul Feig thing, although I don't really want to see Melissa McCarthy bouncing around like an idiot with a proton pack.
Agreed.
But...
That's actually my biggest worry.
Yeah. But, yeah, mostly I just would rather, if there's going to be a part three, I'd want it to be the original creative minds behind it, but whatever.
Well, you can't get that completely, because, as you said, one of them is dead,
mm-hmm.
which is very sad. Dan Aykroyd, with time, he's Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah.
let's just put it that way. I still think he's funny, I still think he's good, and I appreciate all his old stuff, but he's a little crazy.
Pretty crazy.
Yeah. And then Ivan Reitman, I mean, he isn't a producer. He's going to be still a producer of the movie. So I don't know what that means or
it could mean how very involved. Little.
Yeah. It could mean a lot. It could mean very little.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Okay. This is the last one we're going to do. Studio Ghibli, the Japanese animation studio that put out all the Hayao Miyazaki movies like The Wind Rises, My Neighbor Totoro, Grave of the Fireflies, etc. They have just announced that they are halting any future production. They're going to stay a company for distribution of the films they have made already, and to oversee them and those properties, but they have no future plans, so some people say, to make any further movies.
So it's kind of speculative right now from what yeah. I got from you and the little bit I got from the article.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really sad if that's true, because it's also supposed to be one of the last 2D animation studios left. So that's pretty scary.
I mean, there's a lot of Japanese animation out there, I think, that is still pretty much 2D. That is a strangely specific thing to Japanese animation. I mean, yeah. There's a lot of, now if you go over there, there's a lot of like hybrid where the characters will be in 2D, but a lot of the background stuff is in 3D.
Correct.
That's kind of a popular new trend. Yeah, I mean, more so than just that, I mean, you know, Studio Ghibli has a very unique look and a very unique style. It's very unlike most of Japanese animation, which is really hyper stylized and, you know, on the total candy high. Their movies tend to be a little bit more languid, a little bit more breathy, and kind of almost Ozu like at times. Certainly that's how The Wind Rises was. It'd be sad to see their kind of storytelling kind of gone.
Disappear.
Yeah. In favor of more of the giant robot shoots weird tentacle animal thing.
Vampire hunter stuff. Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm going to review Boyhood, which I think I've only seen, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And this was released a few weeks ago. But it was limited. It's now opening a slightly wider, so you may actually get a chance to see it. This is directed by Richard Linklater, who also did Dazed and Confused, Slacker, Waking Life, just finished the Before Sunrise trilogy last year with Before Midnight. And this is a kind of a passion project he's been working on for the last 12 years. He found a young actor named L.R. Coltrane while he was in sixth grade. And has been following him for 12 years, every summer shooting a couple months worth of footage and kind of assembling this life story of this kid while he kind of grows up in and around Austin, Texas. And the story sort of is just that. It's a, you know, on a plot level, it's pretty simple. It's basically just about this kid who's growing up in a broken family. His mother's played by Patricia Arquette, and his father is played by Ethan Hawke. And he sees dad on the weekends. Him and his sister, who is played by Richard Linklater's daughter, Lorelai Linklater. You know, the mother's going back to college to, you know, make more money for her family. And in the meantime, she kind of finds these boyfriends and husbands that the kid has to grow up kind of coming to terms with and fitting in his life. And it's a very kind of observational sort of film where you sort of experience this kid's life with him. He's, you know, he's kind of a kid of few words. Whether stylistically or sort of unintentionally, what's one of the interesting things about the movie is he kind of starts out as a younger kid, sort of more of an emotional cipher, where you're sort of viewing his world through him. And you sort of are living this life with him. And as he grows older, once we get into like 15, 16, 17 years old, he starts to develop more of his own kind of distinct agency and personality, like, you know, kids who grow up do. And then you start to see things not from your perspective so much, but more from his perspective. And also the other tricky thing this movie does really well is it, just as much as it's a movie, it's about boyhood, it's a movie about parenthood. And Patricia Arquette and Ethan Hawke are doing some of their best acting they've ever done in their entire careers in this movie. I'll say it now, I don't know, I could be wrong, but I might expect Oscar nominations for both of them, and especially Ethan Hawke. And I feel bad for Patricia Arquette, because she could have really used this movie for a lot of these years in her career while she was doing The Female Mentalist or The Medium or whatever she was doing. Ellar Coltrane, who's the main character, like I said, he's very quiet. He's very kind of interior, but he's good and he's believable. You can definitely tell he's kind of taking in the world and he's kind of looking and he's kind of observing and he's, and there's a lot of stuff going in, going on with him mentally. And then later that kind of comes out in, as he becomes older, he becomes an artist and these kinds of things. And that part is believable. And he actually develops into a pretty good little actor. We might see this kid do more if he chooses to do more with his career. This is a unique movie. And I think that it's, you know, like a lot of Linklater work, it's very formally interested. He's very interested in sort of breaking conventions of narrative. There isn't really a three-act thing here. There's not a lot of, like, resolution. There isn't a lot of rising tension. There isn't a lot of these kind of specific story beats that we're very used to dealing with in kind of coming-of-age dramas. He kind of just lets this narrative kind of tell itself. And I think that might frustrate some people. Was if they're expecting, like, you know, somebody to get in a car accident or somebody to get cancer or somebody to, break up with, have a big, insane breakup with a girlfriend or something like that. There's little narrative arcs that run all the way through the movie. But it does kind of feel like,
it's more about the journey is what.
Yeah. It's more about the journey. It's more about kind of, almost sort of trying to recreate the feeling of memory, the way you remember things. You don't remember, not everything you remember is significant, and not everything you remember is, a plot point. You remember, that one time when I had that one conversation with that girl, and we seemed to connect, but I never saw her again. You know, those kind of things. And I think it does that really well, and I think it's maybe one of the best movies of the year so far. And it's not a terribly controversial thing to say that, because that seems to be what everyone's saying. So I'll just join the bandwagon and say, yeah, this movie's really fucking good.
Okay, cool.
And it's also beautiful. It's really well shot. You know, Linklater knows Texas, and he knows how to make it look good. you even see a little bit of how he grew up as a director, because he's a little bit more aggressive earlier on in the movie, and it kind of slows down. It kind of becomes a little bit more laid back as the movie goes, just as he has. I liked it.
I got that. Well, no. So what would you say to somebody who's either not, maybe this is their first foray into these kind of, like, seeing a movie at a rep house, or what would you say? Would you say this is universal appealing, or?
Yeah. Okay. Here's the thing. It's narratively speaking, it's a little experimental, but it's also there. I think there's enough here to kind of attach yourself to. It is soaked in Americana. So if you've grown up in these years, you're going to recognize, like, oh, I remember that. Like, you know, he puts in all these little things like technology, or like which Harry Potter is being released in what year, and these kind of things to sort of let you know where you are. And I think a lot of people younger than us who are the same age as this kid who's now 19 are going to enjoy that and find connection to that. But I also think that the adults are going to connect to the parenthood aspect of it, and sort of like those big moments of like, oh, your kid's going to college now and that kind of stuff. I think it's very emotionally resonant, and it's also really funny. That's one of the reasons I really liked Ethan Hawke in this. He's sort of used for comedic relief for most of the movie, and he is just a delight every time he's on screen, and kind of steals every scene he's in. And there's a lot of kind of either awkward, humorous moments or just, you know, flat out good comedic timing in the dialogue. There's a lot of dramatic moments as well. And it's certainly not a comedy with a capital C, but it is pretty much consistently funny.
Oh, that's good.
So I'd say everyone should give it a shot. Okay. It's almost 3 hours long, but it breezes by.
Okay.
Let's go to the movie we both seen, and that is Guardians of the Galaxy, the new Marvel adventure, and I'll let you set that up.
Okay, so Guardians of the Galaxy, we're brought into it through the movie through Peter Quill, who is this kind of spacey thief, kind of one part Han Solo, one part, I don't know, somebody funny. But it's played by Chris Pratt, who just has awesome comedic timing and just has a really good general sense about him. And basically he ends up meeting up with this kind of motley crew of aliens and
space outlaws,
criminals.
Yeah.
who are played by Zoe Saldana, Dave Bautista, Vin Diesel, and Bradley Cooper. You have everything from a genetically experimented on talking raccoon to a giant sentient moving tree.
Mm-hmm.
And basically you get caught up in this intrigue of this thing they're trying to steal and who they're trying to sell it to. And basically there's some big, bad, scary people, criminal organizations in the universe, kind of, in a way, that are trying to get a hand on this ultimate power to destroy planets.
Yeah.
So you kind of get this kind of journey that's kind of one part like, maybe something like Ocean's 11.
Yeah.
One part like Star Wars. And maybe one part kind of like to me at least stylistically, kind of one part kind of Guillermo del Toro kind of film.
Okay, I could see that.
Because of all of the layers and the just, he uses a lot of, he doesn't rely on CG all the time. He actually puts in a lot of stuff that, you know, real makeup and real, and really tries to blend it. And so you get, to me, I thought this was a really fun, atypical kind. This was just a science fiction movie. I would say it kind of has a hint of superhero, if we're still talking about that, but not more. It's more science fiction than anything. And it's kind of space opera.
Space opera, yeah.
Way to say that. I think it's a lot of fun. I think you get some really good villains in there too, because you kind of got your, you've got a character played by Lee Pace, which he's kind of this kind of religious zealot.
Named Ronan.
Ronan the Accuser.
And he even kind of has a Japanese kind of samurai look.
Yeah, and a big old hammer.
Yeah.
And you also have, you have other people, like, to bring in the more criminal element, you have this character played by Michael Rooker called Yondu, who is an
he's a lot
alien.
Of fun.
Yeah. He's yeah, that character is a whole lot of fun.
Yeah.
You also have this kind of big political thing that is very much in the kind of space opera thing, where you have Glenn Close and John C. Reilly playing kind of these intergalactic police kind of characters.
Mm-hmm. And they're talking about like trade tariffs and that kind of stuff. Yeah.
So I'm going to say, in general, I just think that the movie is pretty fun and pretty good. I went along for the ride, and I would say that it's definitely not a movie that has like this big subcontext. It's more kind of a warm, friendly movie about the characters.
Yeah.
And kind of about coming together and finding your own, making and finding your own family.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, I think of the performances, I think Chris Pratt is great.
Yes.
I think Bradley Cooper did an awesome voice job, but also
with Rocket Raccoon. Yeah.
But I think the raccoon works quite well, as does the tree. Dave Bautista, I think this wrestler, does quite a great job.
Yeah.
I would say Zoe Saldana, while her physicality is pretty good, I don't think she, I don't know. I thought she was a little lackluster.
She's the weakest link here. Yeah, that's for sure.
But I think everybody else is pretty strong. What about you? What do you have to add to this?
I thought this was just a heck of a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's not really the best way to explain it.
It's not really about much. It's not really reinventing the wheel as far as, like, you know, if you, the nuts and bolts of the plot is there's a MacGuffin that they have to go get back from the bad guy. You know, it's fairly simplistic in that sense. But the thing that's really great about this movie, and it really speaks to the strength of characters, is that if you care about the characters enough, if they're as fun as they are here and they're well integrated, everyone gets good amount of screen time, it's a true ensemble, they work off of each other, you know, nobody is stealing a scene more than the other, really, and they all bring their own kind of comedic texture. If you can do all of that, it doesn't matter how stupid or how boring or how mundane the plot is, because you care about them. Well, and that's what's really good about this movie, is I could watch these guys do just about anything.
Yeah.
Because they're just so much fun to hang out with.
It would be fun to, just hang out with them while they're... well, I mean, literally, there is a scene where they're literally just drinking and gambling. I was going to say literally just like in a diner or something. But
yeah. And there is a lot of Star Wars in here. Like, you know, there's no two ways around it. James Gunn, the director, obviously is evoking Star Wars. I see a little bit of Fifth Element in some of its eccentricity.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, if you want to go further back, you can go into...
But I think it works, and I think it attaches to the Marvel Universe still.
No, yeah, it definitely... is of that world, and yet you could see how maybe later these guys meet the Avengers or whatever, and that's still gonna play.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, one thing that I thought of walking out of the movie was, this movie did a better job at being a Joss Whedon movie than the Avengers did, who was actually written by Joss Whedon.
I can agree with that.
And I think I usually don't post my immediate opinion online before I've written my review so that people read it. But I couldn't help myself. And on Twitter, I said, this is the best Serenity sequel we could have ever hoped for.
And I think in a lot of ways, I think you're right. When this is kind of also in that body of the continued adventures of Han Solo.
Yeah. And Chris Pratt fits into that really well. And,
the heart of this movie, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I kept hearing this word, and at first I was like, okay, this is a catchphrase, but it really does apply, because it does capture you when you feel, you know, bad for talking raccoons and all sorts of other space weirdies.
You kind of, and if you would describe this movie to a to a person 4 years from now, for, 4 years in the past before anyone knew what this was going to be. Yeah. You just said there's going to be the, you know, if you went to a pitch meeting to people that had no idea what comic books were and be like, so I'm thinking a space opera, right? And there's going to be a talking tree and a talking raccoon, and they would throw you out.
Oh yeah.
They would say, get the fuck out of here. Get this crazy man out of my office now. Because, well, I mean, if you look at it just in a literal way, this movie's really, really weird.
Oh yeah, completely.
And it's sort of great because of that. It feels unique. It does feel familiar, but in the best way possible.
Well, another thing that I think it invokes, and I think on purpose, not on accident, and maybe he's just trying to do this. I think the other one part that I left out, this is one part a Tarantino movie. Just the musical use.
Oh yeah, and, there's the way
some of the cinematics in it.
Yeah,
just the style.
He uses the needle drop, which we talked about a few episodes ago in our pet topic about who does, you know, what, which directors use needle drops really well. And he, the whole movie's kind of scored by 70s pop rock music.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was kind of just sprinkled in there as sort of just being like, you know, to fit the scene or whatever.
Yeah.
The pace. But then I actually saw an interview with him, with James Gunn, and he had actually written the cues into the script.
Right.
He knew exactly what songs were going to play when, and it makes sense. And it also kind of brings this different kind of energy. You know, we don't usually get this from a superhero film.
No. And for him to braid all these types, this is what makes this movie work and become really interesting.
Yeah. I don't think Ronan's a very great villain. I am going to say that. I think that he looks cool, but he doesn't really get a ton to do. And you ultimately are less interested in him than you are the Guardians.
Yeah.
And I don't think, you know, you're worried, you hope that they make it through, that they accomplish their mission. But, he is ultimately just this thing they have to destroy to get their MacGuffin back.
I don't know. I was a little more interested, maybe. I thought the religious zealotry and it was very Darth Vader-esque to me. And I don't think that was bad. I don't think it was to invoke that. I mean, he's not as charismatic as many villains, but
no.
I don't think that was a. I think the performance.
The performance is it's more on a script level. I think the performance is fine. The makeup is great. I just ultimately I don't really know what he's about. Like I don't really feel like I, other than just being the embodiment of evil.
He was. See, what I got from it was he was kind of a spurned. He was a religious zealot. He was kind of a terrorist. He was a big old space terrorist who was trying to blow up planets.
That's
what I got from it.
He's maybe not exactly a huge villain or the main villain, but I really love Michael Rooker in this.
I wouldn't say he's a villain. I wouldn't say he's somewhere in between.
He's basically sort of a Jabba like character. And he's kind of a scene stealer in this, and he has a long history with James Gunn, who also directed Slither, who Michael Rooker was also in.
Right. He has a long running history in the Guardians of the Galaxy universe, so it all kind of ties in neatly.
Yeah, and the movie's just so well cast. With the exception of Zoe Saldana, which, again, I don't know if it's necessarily her fault or maybe she's just a little underwritten compared to the other characters. But even she gets maybe three or so scenes where she kind of stands out.
She does. And I think it has more to do with her. I think she needed to sell the scenes a little bit more emotionally. She did definitely sell the physicality of the character.
Yeah.
But I think she needed more just emotion.
Well, her thing is supposed to be she's the tough-as-nails assassin who has, you know, no sense of humor, and Chris Pratt has to kind of break through her hard exterior. And to some extent, that's kind of the same thing going on with Dave Bautista's character, too, but he kind of pulls it off a little bit more, and he gets a few more good one-liners.
Yeah. Well, just his general, the culture of the character, yes.
Yeah, he has the running joke there is that he doesn't understand metaphor or simile at all, so everything you say he takes literally.
And it works, and it's really
a funny joke that pays off all throughout the movie. Yeah. This is just a blast. It's not... Yeah, it's not going to change your life, I don't think. I don't think that it's maybe not even the best movie Marvel's put out, but it's pretty close to one of the best.
I think it's one of their best, and it's just a lot of fun. So if that's if you're in a good mood and you want a rock and roll,
you kind of walk out of the movie with just a big dorky smile on your face, and it's a kind of a feel good action movie.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, I still think that Captain America 2 is Marvel's best film.
I agree.
I think this is definitely butting up there.
I will say, though, there is that tendency, both in Captain America 2 and this movie, and all Marvel movies to a certain extent, to over-climax. And there's this, it feels like by the time you get to the third act, there's this mayhem... destruction quota,
right,
that has to be met, and you know, basically they have to like come up with a plan to sneak into this place and get this thing. And I would have been much happier with it just kind of being a Temple of Doom, like kind of, you know, work our way through the set piece thing, rather than have 17 different plates spinning in the air at the same time and then end in a giant explosion.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I didn't remember at the time, but while you were saying that, I was like, yeah, during the movie, I was thinking this could be even better if they would have just continued the heist.
Yeah, if it had been more of a heist film rather than this big thing where all the jets and da 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 and the city and it becomes...
I mean, the technology was cool. I did actually think that the designs and everything of this was pretty good and pretty interesting.
Oh yeah, however, no, on a technical level, it's impeccable. But it's just the movie sort of goes on autopilot in the last 20 minutes.
I think it could have. Yeah, it definitely could have. They should have just stolen it back. That would have been more interesting. Yeah. He braids a lot of different influences and stuff, and as many superhero films, which is kind of interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more excited for the second one.
Yes, but I will say this didn't feel like a movie that just set up possibilities. To me, this felt like I was glad to be there.
Agreed.
On a plot level, like, it's not as ambitious, but it like I said, I could watch these characters just do about anything.
Agreed.
All right. Let's go ahead and get into our Netflix homework, which I assigned you 2 weeks ago. Jan Švankmajer's Alice, based on the Alice in Wonderland by Lewis Carroll.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a strange adaptation. He is a Czech Republic filmmaker. This is his first film, I believe. He uses a lot of stop animation and kind of incorporates it with sets and actors. And this movie's kind of a trip. Apparently,
that's a good way to say it.
Apparently, this was made for kids, but it's kind of terrifying.
It's strange. It's strangely creepy, yes.
And kind of, unsightly and bizarre and... And creative.
Very creative.
And I
this is an art movie with a capital A.
Yes, it feels very much...
And a capital R and T, if I have to go that far.
Yes, it's definitely more about sort of the accomplishment of the visuals he's trying to create, mm-hmm, than necessarily the story. Because, I mean, luckily, you know, Lewis Carroll's story is pretty... fluid anyway. It's not really a plot driven story. It's more about absurdity, and he definitely kind of embraces that.
I think it's satirist, and I think it's episodic, and I think that it works great in that level. And I think it culminates in a good idea.
Yes.
And now the book does. Now the movie, I actually think that the director has a very similar take. I think that Alice in Wonderland, what the book is really about, mm-hmm. is about how, from a child's perspective, and really, in really a more truthful perspective, the adult world in a lot of ways is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And sort of nonsensical. And you just have to kind of accept the fact that it's like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's his kind of point of view, but the way he goes about it sometimes, I'm like, wow, this is creepy. This is very, very, very creepy.
Could you imagine, I mean, you kind of watched horror movies as a kid, so maybe this isn't a good question to ask you, but I just imagine like being like, you know, 7, 8 years old watching this, I would have pooped.
Oh, really?
No, I think, at the very least, I would have like had to like turn all my toys around before I went to bed.
First of all, some of the aesthetic choices that he makes are very strange, such as, all the animals are not animals. They are stuffed. They are
taxidermed.
They are taxidermied animals.
Yeah.
And that is at times they're not even taxidermed. They're stripped down, just bare bone flesh monsters.
Yeah.
And as a kid, I probably would have watched it and been like, that was weird, but I'd be kind of into it. But I think it would be kind of boring. I actually found some of the artful choice is a little grating, specifically the one where Alice said, there's specifically these cuts where the girl makes a point to be that this is from the girl's point of view.
Yeah.
And I thought it was at times a little grating and unnecessary, and it kind of made the movie...
A weird choice that whenever Alice speaks, it cuts to a close-up of just her mouth, and she says, Alice said, or Alice spoke softly, or the rabbit said, I agree, that is a huge problem with this movie. And, you know, outside of artistic choice and blah, 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 and unique vision and all of that stuff, all of that, still, doesn't help the movie.
It doesn't make it more watchable.
No.
There needs to be a watchability to it as well. It can't just be like, well, this was my decision. that's cool, bro. But when it gets cool story, bro. But what we really need is a film that we know that's seamless and takes you in and gives you the language. I think this movie would have been better without all that.
Yeah.
I think he could have done it once or twice just to establish that that's...
What's going on?
Yeah, because I thought it was really interesting and kind of cool at first. And then as the film kept going, I was like, no, this is not interesting or cool.
I think that aside, I like this movie for what it is. I don't think that everyone is going to dig this very many people.
You have to want to see art films with capital A-R-T.
I think there's a certain kind of cult horror fan that might dig this too.
And they have to be, somebody who, you know, somebody who's down for experiences like a Wicker Man kind of movie or something like that.
Yeah, or like even like...
I wouldn't say the mainstay kind of slasher kind of people or your Saw kind of people or the people who got into horror through those.
That's what I mean, specifically kind of cult horror. It's kind of more idiosyncratic, strange stuff, especially like if you're really into animation... And you're really into stop animation, specifically like Harryhausen type stuff, or Brothers Quay, or like Tool music videos. which I think they were really influenced by this. I think Adam Jones of Tool probably was really into this guy, as well as Dave McKean. I felt like there was a lot of influence from this.
I can agree with. Well, this movie came out in
maybe even Del Toro.
I don't think Dave McKean, just because this film came out in 88 and that was about the same time, they would be contemporaries.
Yeah.
But they definitely came from the same body of they were influenced by the same stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think this guy maybe was a little Terry Gilliam influenced.
I think as maybe even Clive Barker.
Clive Barker, maybe a little, yeah. I saw a little bit of... Moonrise Kingdom.
Wes Anderson?
Wes Anderson, yeah.
Yeah, actually, I mean, when I was watching this, I thought of him a little bit like, oh, I wonder if he saw this movie and that's one of the directions he may have took Fantastic Mr. Fox from. I mean, that movie's a lot more calm, a lot more kind of decidedly kid-friendly.
Yes.
This movie is definitely kind of otherworldly and very European.
Yeah, I think people who are like into the Pink Floyd's The Wall might like this even. They could get really high and watch this.
I think this would be a kind of a cool double feature with Return to Oz, which is also kind of unintentionally terrifying.
Right.
Agreed. And they both are kind of made around the same time where they're using different forms of kind of visceral animation.
Yeah, using that stop. Yeah, there's something kind of when, especially just because they're taxidermy animals.
And they're like,
but making it like stop motion, that kind of jerkiness makes things a little scary.
Yeah, and you know, his vision of Alice's world, she's not going off into these, you know, these big beautiful flowers and all this stuff that we normally see. This is like this kind of weird sort of junk punk aesthetic where she's stuck in this kind
ugly
of
beat down house. Yeah,
yeah, like in. You know, she's always four-walled in these weird sets that are kind of claustrophobic and dark, and she looks like she could cut herself on something at any moment.
And sometimes does, like the jelly. She puts her finger in the jelly and there's a tack in it when she pulls her finger out.
Mm-hmm.
And were you ever worried? Like, I've never watched Alice in Wonderland and been like, man, she shouldn't drink that. Oh, man, she shouldn't eat that.
No, yeah, there's definitely... This is a weird movie.
Slightly aggressive and hostile. Yeah, I found it... The thing that appealed to me most was my horror fan.
Exactly.
And I was like, this is creepy as shit.
Yeah, like,
this
I want to...
weird and creepy as shit.
So... I ended up liking it. There are some things in it that I think are kind of obnoxious. But I think, you know, for a weird hour and 20 minutes to just kind of... just sort of... let it wash over you and experience it. It's it's unique.
It's that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
What are you going to have for us next week?
Next week we're going to go with, before Catherine Bigelow did her, war hero epic things. She actually did a lot of forays into genre. And one of those genre things was Strange Age, which is a like crime sci-fi tell. So it'll interesting to try that out as an adult.
Yes. Cool. And if anybody has anything they want to add to the discussion, whether it be a Boyhood, Guardians of the Galaxy, Strange Days, Alice, anything, you can contact us at our email, which is jabberinthedrone@gmail.com, or you can find us on Facebook. What were you going
to
say?
The other thing, too, like I think we should add to that, or if you just want to bring up a random topic with us.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't have to be related. You could say, hey, what was your guys' opinion on this film? And if we haven't seen it, maybe it'll be the Netflix homework. I know this is part of the part where people tune out, but we want your letters, please.
Yes, yes.
please talk to us.
If you want to find us on Facebook, you can at facebook.com/jabberpodcast. I also just set up a new Twitter account for just the podcast. So if you want to kind of follow us there, we'll post when we're going to be recording. We'll post news items there as well, and any weird, dumb things I happen to think of. You can find us at Jabber Podcast as well.
Maybe even live tweet us if you want.
Maybe I'll live tweet a movie. I won't do that.
Yeah, don't do that.
You can also find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio or Pocket Cast. Listen to us on your favorite mobile device. While you're at iTunes or Stitcher, please leave us a star rating and a one sentence review. It helps people find the show. Also, you can find our RSS feed and our regular archives at jabberinthedrone.podbean.com. You can read my movie reviews that I do every week for the Idaho State Journal at saladforkreviews.blogspot.com. You can read the content I provide to the Seattle-based movie website MacGuffin at mcguff.in/author/Cassidy. And you can read some of the stuff that Richard has been doing over at his blog, rdwally.weebly.com.
Not for a little bit, though. Like most writers, I create a blog and then...
sits to atrophy.
It atrophies a little bit.
You can follow Brad and Amanda's podcast over at quartercrisis.podbean.com. And I think that's it until next week.
That sounds about right. There's a lot of, we had to go over a lot of ground.
We did.
We put two podcasts into one this week.
All right. Talk to you next week.
Okay, bye.
Bye.